It's that time of the week where we speak to the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates, and he joins me on the line now. KB, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We had the most appalling weather the day before yesterday. It opened up to a hazard for weather forecasting. The waiter said at 11 o'clock, it will be very sunny today, Mr. Bates, till 2:30, then it will rain. And at 2:30, the heavens opened. Stair rods. Fortunately, it didn't get wet, but it's quite funny, I suppose, really. But there, it cleaned up, and now we've got lovely sunshine.
It seems your waiter is maybe wasted in his current profession, if he can predict the weather like that.
Put it this way, he's more accurate than some of the BBC forecasts, that's for sure.
Certainly seems that way. In terms of the news this week, Greece has been pretty high, top of the agenda, with the debt crisis there. An article in front of me you're suggesting why Greece has now only included defence cuts in its Brussels proposals. What have you made of how Greece has moved back to the top of the agenda?
I think what's important is to really understand what the problem is with Greece and avoid all the phraseology and technical terms. Put very simply, first of all, Greece should never have been allowed into the euro. But the civil servants in Brussels were empire building, and they wanted Greece in. Now, when you enter the euro and the common market, you have to fulfil certain minimum requirements, like rules, minimum standards, that sort of thing. And the Greeks thought, that's no problem. I mean, they didn't comply. That's no problem. We just fiddle the figures. And Brussels didn't check them out. Otherwise, they'd found out that they were fraudulent. But they wanted them in, so accepted them. Now, we keep hearing words like deficit and this and that and the other. It's very simple. Greece was spending far more than they were earning. So they balanced the books, or they balanced it by borrowing money. And kept borrowing money. But what we have to look at is that why should people in England have to work till 67 before they retire, when in Greece you can retire when you're 50? Why should people in England pay 20% VAT when the top rate in Greece was 13? And falling as low as 6 to 6. Why should all the Greek islands be exempt from tax? Not saying the Isle of Wight didn't even pay tax, or the Shetlands, or the Shetlands and the Orkneys. Then, of course, Greece is totally corrupt anyway, but also they're totally incompetent. I mean, think of that lovely 130-year-old. State pensioner, still drawing his pension. Or to be more honest, his granddaughter was. Or the 57 gardeners on the payroll at Athens Central Hospital. There's only one problem, they haven't got a garden. And so it goes on. They're totally incompetent, they're totally corrupt. All I think was that, oh, well, yes, lend us some more money, then we'll keep going. And finally, Europe said no. If Greece was out of the euro, then we would have that much less to find over the rest of the world. Why should Germany work hard so that Greece can set their back sides? Okay, then maybe the Greeks are shouting and bawling about the fact that they put the VAT up to 20%, 23%, then they'll ruin the tourist industry. Well, no, it won't, because the euro today is 141. And 2 months ago, it was high 120s, low 130s. That means all the English holidaymakers are going to get a good discount when they buy their foreign currency. And of course, because it's Greece, when the restaurant guy brings you your bill, instead of taking your card out, you take your cash out and say, how much? You knock off for cash, and they knock you off for cash. So it won't affect us, very much. But it might put Greece back to where they should never come from in the first place. And of course they use that threat about, oh, we'll get the Russians to help us out. I think Russia's in a position to help anybody else at the moment. And if they do want to help out Greece, good luck to them. It makes you think that about England leaving, or Britain leaving the Eurozone. It's not as bad of an idea as people think it is. Everybody's turning around and say, oh, this, they turn around and say, oh, so much of our trade is done with Europe will suffer. Well, hang on. We buy more from Europe than Europe buys from us. And there's the rest of the world we can sell our goods to. Well, we'll save $65 billion a year in contributions to running the central area of the EC, and our money goes to countries like Greece. And then we get rid of the Human Rights Act, where a guy who is suspected of a criminal, suspected of a terrorist, he's had his tag removed because it's giving him bad night's sleep because he's so it goes on. And then of course we can stop the migrants, stop the benefits. Guy comes over here from Romania or Poland, gets a job, leaves his wife and kids back at home, and starts collecting child benefits for them. It's ridiculous. Cameron has promised to sort it out. Well, even though I'm a Tory, I've grave doubts about Cameron. And now's his time to prove that he is genuinely a prime minister and a leader, not just a chanterer wearing a hard hat and a yellow viz visiting some sandwich shop. Can you imagine all the damage you get in a sandwich shop? We have to wear safety procedures. So, no. And all that rubbish cut out, I think how many more opportunities are for Yorkshire. Plus we want more chance for the ordinary people of Great Britain. Serving ourselves and not buying Danish yoghurt when we can have Yorkshire manufactured yoghurt. Which moves us neatly on to the Scottish nationalism, who under Salmond and Sturgeon is nearly as big a basket case as Greece. Heavily subsidised by England, bailed out their two banks. Now they're talking about not paying their share of contributing to the monarchy. Well, that's okay. When we're renegotiating the final details of the deal for devolution, we can cut out the Barnett formula, which gives all Scots residents over £1,000 a year more than their English counterparts. And also, if there are now they've abolished tuition fees for universities, then that's discriminatory against the UK citizen. So either they introduce university fees, or English people going up there shouldn't have to pay them either. So it goes on. Equality when it suits them, inequality when it doesn't. I think if you take a tough line with the Scots, particularly since their fringe supporters are bearing beginning to show signs of similarity, rather extreme political parties, past and present. We'll take a tough line. Interesting, you see, if we did leave the Euro, the Scots say they don't want to leave the Euro. Right, I'm saying. Let's rebuild Hadrian's Wall. All the trains stop at Carlisle and Newcastle. British Airways doesn't fly to Glasgow, Edinburgh anymore. Highland Air can do it. Yeah, we've got to be tough. If you want to be in the UK, you can be. You're very welcome. But these are our rules. Same for everybody. No special concessions. It's important. Yorkshire people, Leeds people, Yorkshire people, should take an interest in the politics. Could go to council meetings. Hear what they have to say. Challenge them. Make sure that, unlike Whitehall, Yorkshire politicians and Yorkshire civil servants keep their ear to the ground and their feet on the ground and account to local people for their local decisions, which are going to affect local people. There you are. And to finish off with the other rubbish going around the world, because we've got lovely old FIFA.
Yeah, plenty going on at FIFA at the moment still. Swiss authorities examining FIFA grants at the moment, some development grants in relation to those bids for the 2018 World Cup in Russia and Qatar 2022. The draw for 2018 is going to be held a month today, actually, and Sepp Blatter is expected to attend, the Russian sports minister has confirmed. The latest on FIFA, it still rumbles on and more is eking out slowly.
I wonder how many Greeks are working inside FIFA. Will they have expertise in fraud, misaccounting and hiding all the money? Or in fact, perhaps haven't got enough Greeks working in FIFA. Because if they were, they'd done a better job of it, wouldn't they? But there are a few more cynicism. Let's hope that in due course, FIFA disappear. World football doesn't need them. The regional association groups can run their own. They have a loose federation led by UEFA. So it goes on and on, and I hope to continue. There should be considerable pressure on the sponsors not to associate themselves with FIFA, and the TV companies to bring back Listen with Mother or something as alternatives to watching Russia play Kazakhstan in the 2018 World Cup, if Russia keep it. But all these, you link them all together, don't you? But then you think about it, then you've got GFH. Now, GFH, will probably do a good job of running FIFA. They'll put Blatter and everybody else in jail without charge and without prosecuting. And all the people could get evidence, they'd be locked up as well. And they pretend nothing happened. Drifting. Just for the record, David Hay now entering his 14th month of detention without charge. They say he's going to be charged with criminal activity now. They haven't done anything. And I would think the GFA is terrified he can actually get to court, because David Hay won't be able to reveal all he knows about GFH, which you can't while he's incarcerated. Meanwhile, of course, as we know before, Mr. Hague and Angelina Jolie spent over £5 million in London railing against violence against women in conflict. I don't suppose that made much difference. I suppose the violence against women is still carrying on in Eritrea, Ethiopia, Libya, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, etc., etc., etc. But nobody knew anything about David Haig. Mind you, he's a British subject, isn't he? And therefore it doesn't really matter anymore. But he hadn't committed a few crimes. He'd been out by now. So keep watching the David Haig website. Keep supporting in every way you can. Whether the man's committed financial crimes or not, we don't know. But he has the right to hear what his charges are and respond to them and cross-examine the people who give evidence against him, particularly including that partner of Gibson Dunn, Peter Gray. And I wonder what the Solicitors Regulation Authority are doing in investigating him, since being reported for perjury in Dubai. And of course he has made an unreserved apology to the British courts. But funny enough, nothing happened there either, is it? One despairs.
Closeter, home with Leeds United, this week has been a busy week again at Elland Road for a variety of different reasons. The club signed Sol Bamba, the defender, who of course was on loan, a very successful loan spell towards the end of last season. He signed a two-year deal with the option of a third from Italian side Palermo. Also, Massimo Cellino has been found guilty of tax evasion again over in Italy, this time over unpaid tax on a Land Rover. The Italian courts, this judgment falls under a level of criminality that would be seen over here to affect potentially his ownership of Leeds United and another suspension. But what have you made of the news coming out of Elland Road this week?
Well, I think Bamba is a positive move. He came in and did a good job. What's interesting, you have to remember, he criticised the dismissal of Thompson, or the suspension of Thompson, and the Redford losing his job. And he was outspoken and spoke his mind. Very rare. It has still been signed. So, at the end of his contract, re-signed. So that that may say something about his ability, and also to a certain extent something about Massimo's magnanimity for bringing him back despite his outspoken criticism. So that could mean that ability is now going to be judged in a better way than perhaps has been by past regimes. But relatively speaking, it's quiet on the transfer front. Few have gone, a few have come in. No great shakes. But, yeah, pleased about that one. I'm sure all Leeds fans will be too. Massimo's tax problems. Well, once again, Italy is not as bad as Greece, but it's in the same class, because the laws there are rather vague on everything, let alone tax. All these things drag on. I mean, for example, Mr. Berlusconi, who was president of Italy at one time, was a prominent political leader. He found guilty of all sorts of things. And yet somehow it didn't really matter. He came back to be a prominent leader again in Italy. We don't know the tax laws out there. We don't know the implications. So it's difficult to comment or criticise. Very difficult to get documents. I know that one of the problems that the Football League had in dealing with the earlier case was they simply couldn't get the court documents that would be released to them. So that it's all very vague. very complicated. And I suppose we must give Massimo the benefit of the doubt until something definite comes out to suggest otherwise. Meanwhile, he's getting on with his job. And Pearson seemed to be the first good thing that he's had management-wise for many months now. Again, he seems to be doing a good job. His press releases and interviews will be helpful, a little bit more specific. Because then the fans would know a bit more what's going on and give them even more reason to get behind the club.
And just lastly, the Olympic Stadium, West Ham are going to be moving into it at the end of next season. They're moving from the Berlin ground. The cost of this to the taxpayer has been vast. It's already reached a reported £272 million. West Ham contributing approximately £15 million to that. They will also pay rent, thought to be in the region of £2 million a year. That's not been made public, though. The Leyton Orient chairman, Barry Hearn, one of those calling for this to be made public. It's another... political sports story. We've covered a couple of them already, and it's equally one that kind of gets people upset about this one, to see the Olympic Stadium almost being handed to a football club at the expense, the vast expense of the taxpayer.
Well, when you think of the fact that because the Yorkshire Consortium, which included the late Mr. Levy, Mr. Krasner, and one or two others, Simon Morris, and father, etc., because of what they did, Leeds United are paying nearly £2 million a year in rent, and then a road in Thorpe Arch. So to be handed the Olympic Stadium, same amount of money, a $15 million down payment, seems ridiculous. Well, the trouble is, of course, it all revolves around the fact the Olympic Stadium had a running track. And a running track is no good for atmosphere in football. And that's why it's cost so much to mend it. Now, when I was chairman of Wembley, one of the biggest things was football was being dictated to by Olympics, which is just a tail wagging the dog. And the specification of Wembley included a running track. And I was determined we would not have one in. After all, the old Wembley had a running track. They hadn't held a sports meeting there since 1948. That's 50 years. In fact, they turned it into a dog track for a little while and closed that down because it didn't make enough money. But it destroys the atmosphere, adds to the complication of the design of the ground, makes it very... They talk about retractable seating. Well, retractable seating, by its very definition, it has hydraulic pipes, electricity cables, all of which expose the elements. So you have continuing maintenance problems as it deteriorates, and as I said before, it affects the atmosphere. So I wanted the end, of course. We didn't have a running track at Wembley. The original specifications were 80,000, got up to 90,000, and got a fixed price contract signed for, wait for it, £234.5 million. So when you keep reading the newspapers that Wembley cost nearly £800 million, you ask what it was spent on after I left. So the White Elephant in East London will be a continuing drag, because I would suspect that stadium probably need a second or two in a year in maintenance. So our West Ham paying rent plus maintenance, our West Ham paying rent and the landlords, I ultimately the taxpayer, picking up the maintenance. And how does that affect fair play? When other clubs have very expensive money costs, which are not subsidised by the taxpayer. So therefore, they are all accepted. And the other thing, of course, that West Ham saying they're going to discount the prices, well, that probably put Leighton Orient out of business. But of course, who cares in the greater glory of politics and grandiose projects? So there we are, Sam. Enough to think about. Why don't you now tell our listeners and online what's going on down at Ellen Road, 247 Ellen Road, about how you're updating the equipment. The staff are getting even more training as you prepare for TV Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, plenty going on at the station at the moment. As we discussed last week, TV Yorkshire will be with you late summer. And this will be an expansion of what we've been doing on the video side of the business. You know, we've, I think, been quite forward-thinking in terms of introducing video and TV into radio, but we now want to take that to the next level. So plenty going on, lots of training behind the scenes, a brand new television studio as well that's coming along very nicely. So, you know, I think a lot of radio stations do video as kind of a secondary thought. We want to kind of put it side by side with the radio and make it, you know, just as good, just as professional, and just as interesting to watch, rather than being the afterthought of and the production values not being very good. So, you know, we're well on track for that to happen. And of course, next week, by this time next week, everyone will be rescanning their DAB digital radios to continue receiving Radio Yorkshire, the multiplex. The current MXR Yorkshire Multiplex, which broadcasts the station on DAB, is closing on the 30th of June. So from the 1st of July, we'll be found on two new multiplexes. So you'll need to rescan your digital radios in order to keep listening to Radio Yorkshire.
And finally, I've got an idea, Sam.
Yes.
We're planning our new schedules for TV Yorkshire. Let's ask our listeners and our viewers online, what content would you like to see on our station? One idea has come up, for example, in the old days, there used to be a Sunday morning radio program called Down Your Way. And they used to go and visit little communities, interview them, and play music chosen by the local head of the council and maybe a shopkeeper and the local vicar and so on and so forth, who also told the librarian, who also told a bit of a story about the local community. And we could call it Down Our Way. And be visual as well. And that's just one thought. Loads of interesting little villages and communities in Yorkshire, which has history, which in some small way is long forgotten to the outside world, played a significant part in Yorkshire's growth and history. And that would be a great story for our worldwide audience as well as our local people. So that's one thought. But what would our listeners and our online followers like to see visually on our TV station? So any ideas? Right into Sam, station commander, Radio Yorkshire.
Yeah, you can get in touch via the website radioyorkshire.co.uk. You can email studio@radioyorkshire.co.uk. or you can contact me directly, sam@radioyorkshire.co.uk, for all your television pictures. I look forward to receiving them.